You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa, oh, oh, oh. The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the Punt Podcast here with William Hill, Alex Dunn in the presenter's chair, looking ahead to Premier League football, which is back once again after an international break. No more of those pesky breaks for a little while now. And we've got four televised games to go at today and a whole host of bets to put up. Derek McGovern joins me on the line. Hello, Derek McGovern.
Good morning to you.
Are you well, Derek?
Yes, very well, very well. Just mourning the fact that another international weekend has come and gone.
I know.
How I'll miss them.
Crushing devastation. Andy XL's here as well. Hello, Andy.
Good morning. I enjoyed the international break. I thought it was good for a change.
Is that because you do less work in the trading room when the international break's on?
Might have something to do with it.
We've got a busy weekend of Premier League football. No Saturday lunchtime game, unfortunately. But we've got Monday night football coming up a little bit later. We start on Saturday tea time, Spurs against Chelsea. A London derby with Chelsea unbeaten so far this season and Spurs yet to draw. So, Derek, does this just point to a Chelsea win?
Well, yes, it does, actually. You know, I looked at this picture and I tried to price it up in my head before I looked at the Hills prices, and they were pretty much exactly as I had them, which is probably for the first time ever. It is a tough one to call, but when you look more closely behind the headlines, you see that, you know, we hear an awful lot about Spurs haven't signed anyone, but this season they haven't beaten anyone either. They've had four tough fixtures this term, two in the league, two in the Champions League, Liverpool, Man City, Inter Milan and Barcelona. And guess what? They've lost all four. Mm. This is the fifth tough fixture, and I think they'll lose this one as well. They're doing exceptionally well to be up there, the top three or four, given that they played eight of their 12 games away from home this time round. I mean, that is really good. But whenever serious questions are being asked about them, they've failed to come up with the answers. And Chelsea's away record, not just in the league, in every competition this season, has been fantastic. And I think they'll beat Spurs, I really do.
Yeah, not only have Spurs not beaten anyone of note, Andy, they've not been wildly impressive in brushing aside the lesser teams either.
No, I said to a Spurs fan in our office, or it's obviously going to be a good conversation between me and Arsenal fans, saying, welcome to the Arsenal of 10 years ago, because that's what you're about to get for the next 10 years. We're trying to build a new stadium and finance everything. You won't be signing any players or anybody any decent. And that's precisely what's happening. And they seem to have stalled. I think they've got one or two players with World Cup jet lag, if you like, as well. They're struggling to keep going at the high level they're asked to perform at. So that's the factors behind them. Chelsea, as Derek said, they're not beating the top teams, whereas Chelsea are just getting the best out of what they've got. The only thing about this game that's contradictory to everything I've just said is that the two games last season, really, there was one win each, and the game Tottenham lost at Wembley, they were absolutely robbed because they mullered them, really. So the form in the last two games would give Spurs the edge, but everything else points to Chelsea. So that's why it's so hard to call this one.
We've got enhanced odds. Chelsea to win to nil out from 15 to 4 to 9 to 2. And Eden Hazard to score first, regardless of the scoreline, was 5 to 1. We've pushed that out to 6s. There's plenty of your odds markets as well on the William Hill website. It is an intriguing game, and whichever side you are going to go for, you're going to get a fairly big price. 17 to 10 Spurs, the draw 12 to 5, Chelsea 8 to 5. If I was to push you for a bet, Derek, what would it be?
There's a lot of attacking talent on show here. And I remember about two or three seasons ago, this fixture finished 5-3, I think it was, for Tottenham. But I can't see a goal fest this weekend. Something about this fixture screams a 1-0 win for Chelsea.
Okay. 1-0 Chelsea for Derek, which is priced up at 17 to 2. Andy?
Two facts stats, if you like, about that. Both teams to score in five of the last six meetings in this game, which is contrary to what Derek said. You would think that it would be low scoring, but generally it doesn't seem to be. So both teams to score, over 2.5 goals is 8-11, so that might not be a terrible one to go for. If you're looking for a player to score, Dele Alli's got a good record in this fixture, so it might look in his direction. But I'm just going to go for Spurs because with my tipping record, I can get them beat. So.
Yeah. Dele Alli to score any time is 19-5 in this game. And yeah, it is an intriguing clash. Both teams are score priced up at 4-7 if you are going that way. And as Andy mentioned, over 2.5 at 8-11. But a bit of a difference of opinion from our two pundits on Spurs against Chelsea. What about Bournemouth-Arsenal then on Sunday, 1:30, the kick-off time for this one. An Arsenal side who made an impressive start to the season, but they've conceded first in the last three games now and have gone on to draw all three of them, Andy.
Yeah, and this first half form is a bit of a running theme. I did talk about it a couple of weeks ago. That in all their winning run, they've not led at half-time in any of the games. So they're 5-2 to lead at, I think Bournemouth are 5-2 to lead at half time here. So going off the back of what you've just said, that might not be the worst angle to go at, because Bournemouth are a team in cracking form. The all time stats in this fixture are 4 Arsenal wins, 1 draw and 1 Bournemouth. But Bournemouth was the last one. And there was one in there that finished 3-3, which Arsenal really got away with murder at Bournemouth when Olivier Giroud came on and turned a game. Which is selling you something. So, don't know. If I was looking at this and not being an Arsenal fan, I'd have to be with Bournemouth, I think. And Callum Wilson, he's in the England squad. He scored 3 in his last 4 against Arsenal. 2 of them were penalties, but again, if you're looking for a goal scorer, you might go in his direction.
Okay, Callum Wilson 13-10 to score any time. Once again, a whole host of your odds markets available on this game. And if you are looking for some bigger price things based around the fact that Arsenal tend not to turn up, particularly the first half, but do in the second, Arsenal's highest scoring half to be the second half is 23-20. Or Bournemouth to lead at half time and not win is priced up at 15-2, which is a big old price, Derek.
That is a big price. That is a very big price indeed. I'm not sure I agree with Andy being Bournemouth being in cracking form, because they've lost their last two. One was against Man United, of course, and the other one was against Newcastle a couple of weeks ago. They play Liverpool and Manchester City in the next few weeks as well. So they're going to have to get something out of this game, because they've had a good start to the season. That is in danger of stalling right now. Arsenal have played 5 away matches in the Premier League, and they've conceded 9 goals in those games. Something tells you Bournemouth are going to be scoring against them. They generally do. When you look at Palace, Crystal Palace have only conceded 9 away goals in 6 matches. So it shows you where Arsenal have a real problem. Both teams to score looks absolutely nailed on. I like that bet, though, the 15-2 you've highlighted. I wouldn't put anybody off back in Bournemouth to win this game, because Arsenal are beatable. I know they went on that long, long unbeaten run. But that ain't going to be happening again. I wouldn't put anybody off that 15-2 for Bournemouth to be leading at half-time and not win.
Yeah, OK. Certainly looks a big price. Bournemouth in the outright betting 13-5. Both teams to score is 4-9 outright, but combine them, Bournemouth and both teams to score, and that's 4-1. So perhaps a bit of value, a couple of bigger priced picks in the Bournemouth-Arsenal game. Also on Sunday, we've got Wolves against Huddersfield. Wolves are 47-100, basically 2s on. The draw, 3-1. Huddersfield are 15-2. Pretty rare, Derek, at this stage of the season that you'd have a side who've just come up at this kind of price at home against a side that haven't just come up. But it's a sign of the times. Wolves are having they're having a good season, but they are darlings of the bookmakers, aren't they?
Yeah, they are the Southampton of modern day. The prices are all wrong. I looked at this fixture earlier in the week and I thought, yeah, it's going to be Wolves. And then I looked at those prices and I thought, not in a month of Sundays could I back them. You look at this fixture and one thing springs to mind, bring back the international break. It's not a glamour fixture, is it? Huddersfield have conceded an average of 3 goals every away game. They're in luck this week because Wolves are not free scorers. That's been their big problem. Huddersfield are second from bottom for a reason. That reason being they're the second worst side in the league. But I keep coming to these odds. That 15-2 is just too big. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous, in fact. Huddersfield Remember when he played Liverpool in that match? Was it a Saturday evening a few weeks ago? I may have read that fixture wrong, because everybody else I've spoken to about Huddersfield says they're a side that are improving. You know, they'll surprise a few sides. I haven't seen evidence of that, because when I saw that Liverpool game, and they were the better team, they should have won. I marked it down as Liverpool being absolutely appalling rather than Huddersfield being good. But I've had a down on Huddersfield for 18 months now. And maybe I should ease up a little bit on them. I'm going to ease up on them now, because those 15-2 odds are just absolutely ridiculous.
Okay. Huddersfield, maybe to nick it then. 15-2 is a huge, huge price. You could even back them double chance at 13-8 for Huddersfield or the draw, which also seems pretty big. Let's talk about Steve Meunier, Andy, Huddersfield's striker. He has had 21 shots without scoring so far this season. That's more shots without a goal than anyone else. He's 16-5 to score any time, but that doesn't scream to me to be a good 16-5, does it? He's not prolific.
No, and half of the 21 didn't end up in the stadium. he's you know, he is what he is. He's a big target man, old-fashioned target man. He'll do the graft work, which Huddersfield need, but he's not going to score goals for you. And goals are going to be at a premium in this game. Wolves have been good, but they've been good against teams where they've been able to play on the counter, and that's not going to happen in this game. Huddersfield are going to be the defensive team, and Wolves are going to have to break them down. And that will be a test for them, because, you know, Huddersfield are improving in the sense that they're learning and they're being more Premier League savvy. So Wolves have only won 3 of 7 at home, so I couldn't be with the short price there. The last three meetings between these two teams, albeit they're all in the Championship, Huddersfield won the lot 1-0. Every game was 1-0. So you couldn't put that off, but I'd be going towards the draw at 16-5, and your double chance at 13-8 isn't a bad shout either.
Mm. Okay. So Wolves, obviously the right favourites, but a little skinny for both pundits in that Sunday tea time clash. Now, Monday night football is back, and we've got Burnley taking on Newcastle. Burnley are 9-5. The draw is 21-10, and Newcastle are 17-10. We've got Newcastle, who've lost 11 of their last 12 Monday games. All of them have been away from home, Andy, and this one is too. I was absolutely astonished to see Newcastle priced up as favourites for this.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's saying what's happened to Burnley. Well, you know, where have they gone from last year? Well, they have gone downwards, but so have Newcastle. This isn't going to be an attractive game, let's be honest. I mean, there's three draws in the last six fixtures. The other three all finished 1-0. Newcastle have had 3 0-0s in 6 aways this season. You know, where are we going here? It's going to be the odd goal, if anything. So 0-0 is 6-1. I wouldn't put you off that. And again, I'm going to be with the draw at 21-10, because I just can't split the two teams, and neither of them can score many.
Very difficult to speak on behalf of a whole fan base, Derek, but I'm going to try. I would say that the majority of Newcastle fans would see a point at Turf Moor as being okay. And that doesn't scream, I really want to be back in that side at 17-10 in this game. I'm amazed Burnley are 9-5.
On what basis are Newcastle favourites? I just don't understand it.
Well,
why are they favourites?
Won the last two. That's all I could go at.
Level on points in the table, and they're away from home, and we know what they're like away from home. They haven't won away all season. You know, Burnley's home record doesn't look great, but they played United and Chelsea at home, and they've had the torture of the Europa League qualifiers as well. Okay, they had those three games when they shipped a load of goals, but they were against good sides. And in the most recent outing, they drew 0-0 at Leicester. I mean, you know, that's a decent point. That tells you they've worked on things defensively. It was only a few weeks ago Bournemouth went to Turf Moor. Flying as well, they were, Bournemouth. And they got pasted 4-0.
Mm.
Are Newcastle as good as Bournemouth? No, they're not. It's absolutely ridiculous. Burnley have struggled this season. And some people are surprised that, you know, there hasn't been any calls for Sean Dyche's head. But I'm not surprised. Who'd want a head like that? The more I look at this, the 8-11, you know, in the both sides to score 8-11, no. Mm. The more I look at it, it's probably the best bet I will ever strike. And that doesn't necessarily mean it will win, like, but I've got to go for that. And it will be. Whatever the results, one of these teams is going to end up with nil after the name, possibly even both.
Yeah, 6-1 for 0-0, as Andy mentioned in this game. But last year, where these two sides met at Turf Moor, was also on a Monday night, and it finished 1-0 to Burnley. And I think
Jeff that could happen again.
Hendrick. It was Jeff Hendrick, and it was an absolute Burnley performance, if that makes sense. It was just get the job done. It wasn't pretty, but it won't be pretty on Monday night either. 6-1 for Burnley to win, 1-0. If you like that. Right, let's talk naps, shall we? Now, I normally let you lot go first, but I've already written mine down, so I'm going to go with mine. Everton minus a goal, home to Cardiff, 11-10.
That'll please Derek.
I think they'll wipe the floor with Cardiff. I quite like Everton going forward. I think they'll score at least three, and Cardiff can only get one at most. So minus a goal, odds against, will do for me. Derek.
Well, I'm going to. I'll surprise you. You surprised me with that bet. I'm going to surprise you even more. Watford almost 5-1 to beat Liverpool.
24-5. Yeah.
Too big.
Okay, just outright. No drawn bets.
Why would you? Liverpool have been appalling all season. I know you're going to say Cromwell and second in the league, only 2 points behind Man City. God, I don't know how that happened. That's as inexplicable as when United finished second. Was it last season? Yeah, it was. That was inexplicable. Well, Liverpool's standing right now is even harder to explain. Watford should not be almost 5-1 to beat them.
Okay. 24-5, the nap for Derek McGovern. If you are looking for a bit more insurance, Watford plus a goal, so double chance, 29-20, another really, really big price if you are looking for that insurance. Andy?
A nap is probably what I'm going to be having in front of this game. Burnley v Newcastle draw, 21-10, I think it was.
Okay. And likely a low-scoring one as well on Monday night. Anything else to mention from either of you?
No, other than, don't bother watching. After the Bournemouth-Arsenal game on Sunday, I think you can turn off your TVs. The other two games, Wolves, Huddersfield and Burnley-Newcastle, are not going to be keeping you awake.
No.
Just a throwback to the international break. We're going to have to start taking England seriously soon, and I mean that.
Interesting.
In terms of winning things.
Okay. Well, we've got Carrie Brown from BNTV who'll be joining us in just a moment. Derek, you stay on the line. As for you, Mr. XL, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you very much.
We should be in for a real thriller in Madrid on Saturday night, with Barcelona in town to take on Atletico Madrid, with just a point separating the two sides at the summit of La Liga. And whilst the temptation is to suggest that Atletico will look to do what they do best and try and stifle Barcelona and engage them in a low-scoring affair, as we've seen them do time and time again at home, I really think the opposite will occur here. If there's any team in the world that can contain Barcelona, it probably is Atleti, who are arguably the best team in the world when it comes to the art of defending. They've conceded a league low of 8 goals this year, which is no surprise, but Barcelona have scored an abnormal 34 goals already in 12 La Liga matches so far, and I don't think even Atleti can keep them out in this one. Another positive for this bet would be that if Diego Godin was to miss out, he carried on playing through injury in the last league match, scoring the winner as Atletico came from behind twice to beat Bilbao, but played no part of Uruguay's international games during the break. He's an integral cog in this Atleti backline, but to be fair, with or without him, they won't stop Barcelona scoring. Barca games average a stunning 4.33 goals per match this year. That's almost a goal more than anyone else in the league, and they themselves were involved in a goal-rich game before the international break, losing 4-3 to Real Betis at the Nou Camp. Both these teams have scored 3 goals in their last game, but both conceded to inferior opposition too, so I'd be very hopeful this game will also feature goals. I'm going for both teams to score on over 2.5 goals in this match at 13-10 as the nap this week.
Delighted to be joined on the line now by Carrie Brown, looking back at the Nations League for England and discussing plenty of things. Carrie, good morning to you.
Good morning. How's good week.
Yes, exactly. How's things with you? All right?
Yeah, very good. Very, very, very stable after an international week, and very, very lots of great excitement for the future. Isn't that a nice place to be?
Exactly. Well, the Nations League was ridiculed by some beforehand, but now that England have proved to be quite good at it, I think people have warmed to it, haven't they?
I think we can say we all pretty much looked at it with a little bit of consternation, thinking it would be again an oversaturation of international games being trying to give it meaning, and this really has. And it was very special to be in Wembley with that atmosphere. It was, after all the talk of the Wayne Rooney send-off or celebration to get bums on seats. So this is what the Nations League has done on its own, by its own narrative. And that's the point. Any team, any fan will get behind a team with purpose, and Gareth Southgate has to give himself a lot of credit for that, because there is a excitement in the team he's developing and bringing forward, and also everyone loves the winner.
Exactly. Derek, you've been, how can I put this? Rather sceptical of England, of international football. You don't like much, to be honest with you. But can you not accept that the Nations League has served a purpose and has lifted spirits? And plus, you'd rather watch England play Croatia and Spain, and whether you're winning or losing against them, than playing meaningless friendlies against Slovenia, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would. But the big thing, the only good thing I can say about it is that Germany being relegated, 2 years from now they'll be in Group B with the likes of Austria, Czech Republic, Poland and Russia. It's just, I've watched the England games in this competition. I've decided that it's just another international competition to bore the moves off me. Seriously, I just can't get worked up by it. And I've said on many times I won't rest, Alex, until my campaign to ban international football succeeds. So on my petition so far, I have two names, me and Scotland. Now, you know, there's been a bit of a build-up. Okay, the nation's getting excited because England, you know, got to whatever it is, the last 4 days. There's now a six-month wait for the semi-finals. 6 months for the semi. That breaks Pele's record. I mean, so you get a bit of excitement, and now it's all dissipated. Sorry, I just can't have it. I can't have it. It's the European Championship. Every one of the last 10 of them has bored me. Ditto the World Cup. And I favour the Nations League as well. I just can't say. I can't get off my seat.
Okay, fine. Carrie, on a more positive note, the English side... recently, very youthful. You've got a lot of players coming in, and even since the World Cup, when it was a young side, more players have been blooded in the Nations League. I'm talking about the likes of Sancho, etc. And the future does look fairly bright. It's a very, very young side, isn't it?
I'm going to ask you both a question, and all our listeners a question. How much memorabilia, programs, tickets, press releases on special days have you all kept? Because in our job, it becomes a bit of a burden, because it's hard to throw anything away, isn't it?
Mm. I've got a whole backlog of programmes from Newcastle games from 15 years ago that are probably worthless. To be fair, they may have been thrown out by now. I've left them in the loft at home. But, yeah, I keep a lot of that stuff. Derek, do you keep any of that?
I've got an ABBA poster still on my wall.
Well, this will make Derek probably absolutely cringe, but I think I've got about two crates. I've got it down to now. I'm proud of that, because I had about four. And in amongst them, I found not only the programme of Harry Kane's debut at Aston Villa, which I took along for an interview with Pochettino, and then he made me cringe as he said, "Can I keep it?" I was like, okay. But also... Sorry, Derek, the document of the England's DNA. Now, I'm sure the very sound of that will make Derek cringe, but it's actually really interesting to grab it and look at it now. And it's all remarkably salient now. If you look back at every single signpost that Gareth Southgate and his team wanted to tick off. And I found one thing really particularly interesting as well in terms of timing. That England game against the USA was almost a year to the day that Southgate was really questioned for blooding through so many young caps against Germany. And people were talking about feigned injuries and players not wanting to turn up. And now, a year later, there are all these question marks about whether Wayne Rooney was able, the greatest ever goal scorer, or should he now pull on the shirt? And this is how much he's changed the perception of this team, that everyone is now, even after getting into this semi-final, and putting that monkey on our back that was Croatia, that seems to be the new Germany. Even now, everyone's talking about the new players that will be coming through. Phil Foden, Reece Nelson, Wan-Bissaka. The lists are coming because everyone wants to know who's next. And this whole transformation is just fascinating.
Mm. Of course, Derek, it's not just about England. Scotland have won a thing.
Yes, the Albania game.
The Albania game and the Israel game. They've won twice. I can't think of many times that Scotland have won twice in a week recently.
Or even once. No, I know. It is quite incredible. So, hats off to Scotland.
What about the Republic of Ireland, Derek? They've got no manager anymore. Martin O'Neill has stood down, so has Roy Keane. I mean, that's been coming for a little while now, hasn't it, to be honest?
Yeah, it's as it be, isn't it? They've, in their time at the helm, they've declined at a rapid rate. And what surprised me is that they hung around so long because they were not getting any better under those two clans.
No.
So it remains to be seen if they improve under new guidance.
Yeah. Right, that's the Nations League sorted. During the Nations League, it can often be a bit of a... You get the odd slow news day on the Premier League front. And Richard Scudamore appears to have dominated matters recently. Of course, he's leaving and has been rather handsomely given a very nice bonus carry-in. Football fans, almost as one, have gone, I'm not having that. Football clubs, the majority of them, have said, yep, that's absolutely fine. Where do you stand on it?
I think any football fan, any football supporter, anyone, I've been spending the last fortnight with coaches of a non-profit volunteer youth club that's bloody through two very significant players from my channel being sports that I work for, and they're all working as volunteers trying to keep pitches going through the winter months. Fans that are travelling, struggling to pay for season tickets. Tottenham Stadium move where they paid more for a season ticket and they're not even in that stadium that they're paying for extra seats. There's a lot of consternation. We're in a period of austerity. It's the wrong time to be asking for this. Now, Scudamore said he was embarrassed. He has $2.8 billion in, you know, world rights, to put that into context. But it just, the timing of this, it doesn't, in terms of industry, in terms of the role he's in, yes, that would be a fairly standard payoff. But when clubs at the grassroots, that blood through our players, that are so vitally, vitally important, can't get matches on through the winter months because the pitches are not on to scratch, the trickle-down is not good enough, and this is, it's an insult. That's all it can be seen as.
I suppose that's the key, isn't it, Derek? That this money could have been better spent elsewhere within the game, where it would have made a real difference.
And it's not only at grassroots football, you know, it's so many. Yeah, I've got kids who play football, and they never get to play every weekend now. A bit of rain and the pitches are not playable. Yeah, a few bob there, and then I read earlier this week there are only four clubs in the Premier League that pay their lower paid workers a living wage. That's Everton, Liverpool, West Ham, and Chelsea. At Everton, the lower paid workers are the players, I think. And, you know, it's absolutely scandalous. Kerry says that Scudamore is embarrassed. Well, if he's that embarrassed, let him hand the money back. You wouldn't think you'd need the money anyway after riding all those winners from Martin Pipe, would you? I can't have it. It's just an absolute disgrace. And, you know, football used to be the working man's game, and it's now just a horrid example of corporate greed. It's how far we've come.
But as well, I saw a good point on Twitter that, yes, he's been very, very successful within his job, Kerry, but so are many people, and they don't get payoffs like that.
I think, I think if we're looking in industry, look, I think there's a lot of respect as broadcasters and as print journalists for what Richard Scudamore has done. And so it's a difficult position for us to roundly rebuke Scudamore himself. I mean, he didn't ask for it. The one key point as well, which has been ironed out after the story was brilliantly released, was that he is being kept on in a sense as a retainer. So this will be over a period of years. He will then be, it's now being organised that he won't be able to negotiate or help other people negotiate Premier League deals, which would be a massive advantage. And his wealth of knowledge in that is vitally important and be well sought. There's also interest from La Liga to take him over to La Liga, and that will put him, the La Liga and Scudamore in direct competition with the Premier League again. So there is a sense of wanting to protect the asset that has made the Premier League great, which is therefore a lot more understandable.
You mentioned the retainer and the fear that he could go to La Liga. Haven't we got you on one of those, Derek, as well? Is that not...
Exactly. I might go to Ladbrokes. Is that what you're saying? Yeah,
yeah, quite possibly. Yeah. Unfortunately, we've had no interest just yet. But
no, well, that does surprise me. It's absolutely crazy, isn't it? I mean, you say that, you know, under his stewardship, the Premier League has gone from getting so much to, you know, billions now in TV rights. But who's to say he wouldn't have got more under somebody else? You know, it would have gone up anyway with you or I in charge. It's absolutely just makes me sick. Absolutely makes me sick.
Right. Well, anyway, I think that's just about all we've got time for now. But thank you very much for joining us, Carrie.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, Mr. McGovern, once again.
Cheers, pleasure.
And we'll now hear from Pete, Gav and Al on the Championship, League One and League Two. Good luck with whatever it is that you're back in this week, listeners. And we'll speak to you next week on The Punt.
Hi, my name's Pete Farries, and in the Championship this week, I'm going back for my nap on the overs train. It's been good to me this season so far, backing overs in some games and having teams like West Brom in the league hasn't hurt at all. But this week, I'm going for over 2.5 goals at 21-20 between Swansea and Norwich City. Now, one thing you've got to bear in mind is that Swansea's games so far average the second least in the league, just 1.88 goals per match. But Norwich have been scoring for fun. Four past Millwall, where of course they conceded three. Four past Sheffield Wednesday, it landed against Villa. It landed against Forest, giving you four of the last five Norwich games where it has come through. Much smaller level for Swansea. It landed against Blackburn in the 3-1 win, the 2-1 loss to Rotherham as well. But they can score goals at home, Swansea. The three past QPR, the three past Blackburn, the two past Reading. So if Swansea can score, and Norwich are scoring an awful lot, then 21-20 for overs on the goals seems fantastic. So that's my nap in the Championship this week. Over 2.5 goals in the Swansea game at 21-20. Whatever you're backing, very best of luck. Let's head over to Gav Puszczalowski and get his thoughts on League One.
My nap in League One seems to be relatively straightforward this weekend, with two sides going in complete opposite directions. Sunderland looking to go top and replace Portsmouth, with Walsall, who started well, but are dropping down the league. Sunderland 21-20 to win at Walsall, and that is my nap. Walsall's home form is not brilliant, three defeats in five, and have failed to score in three games in five at home against an all-conquering Sunderland side on their travels, who in League One have won four games straight away from home. And if you throw in some checker trade and FA Cup action, Sunderland have won six straight on their travels. Sunderland away from home, their last three games, they've won 2-0, and all five goals they've scored in those three games have come in the second half. So maybe draw Sunderland could be a play to boost the price. It's the first meeting between these two sides in the league for 14 years. The last meeting was here at Walsall, which Sunderland won. I'm expecting them to do the same this weekend. So my nap is Sunderland at 21-20 to win away at Walsall. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
In a league of crazy form lines, here is one constant: Macclesfield are terrible. And they're playing a Yeovil side who are 11-8. Now, Yeovil did lose away in the last league game at Morecambe, which isn't great. But Morecambe scored with two out of their three shots, Yeovil with one of their 14. And besides, this was weeks ago. They played in the Trophy and the FA Cup since, and they had last weekend off because, not even a joke, Yeovil had too many international call-ups. Well, Macclesfield did play last week, and they lost. A familiar feeling, given they've lost all four of their league games in the last month. Goals scored, 1. Goals against, 12. Yeovil might be bottom half, but those international call-ups means they've played two games fewer than almost everyone else. Even given just 3 points from those two games, they'd be top half. Macclesfield, they are 7 points adrift of everyone else. They have just 7 points all season. 1-1, drawn 4, lost 13. And Yeovil are odds against, despite no one other than Lincoln and Carlisle in this entire division having won more league games away from home. Yeovil, 11-8.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.